It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
And away we go, episode 815 of the Al Galdi Podcast. It is Sunday, April 28th, 2024. And here we are. It is you. It is me. The oh-so-rare weekend installment of the Al Galdi Podcast. This is a podcast for which there is a new episode each weekday morning, Monday through Friday. But we do occasionally do what we like to call scheduled emergency installments of the podcast. And what has become a tradition is the scheduled emergency installment of the podcast for the weekend of the NFL draft. And always remember, the only thing more urgent than an emergency is a scheduled emergency. Hello and welcome to this Sunday installment of the Al Galdi Podcast. The 2024 NFL Draft is complete, and the Commanders, the Washington Commanders, are getting rave reviews, including this. The Commanders had the best all-around 2024 draft of any team in the NFL, per the NFL's Next Gen Stats, which has the Commanders as having drafted a league-high 6 players each with an overall draft score of at least 75. Did our team just have the transformational draft that we were hoping for via this new front office led by general manager Adam Peters and via the team having 6 of the top 100 picks in the draft? Did something truly special just happen? Coming up over the next 2 segments, analysis of what our team did on Friday night in rounds 2 and 3 of the draft, and of what our team did on Saturday in rounds 4 through 7 of the draft, including key comments from Adam Peters, who did a press conference late night on Friday night, and key comments from assistant general manager Lance Newmark, who did a post-draft press conference on Saturday evening, and who during that press conference explained what the Commander tag is. Are you aware of this new thing, the Commander tag? We, during this Lance Newmark post-draft presser on Saturday evening, had this exchange between Commanders insider Sam Fortier of the Washington Post and Lance Newmark.
Adam mentioned yesterday getting a Commander tag. Is that like a something that's on the draft board? And if so, like, what does that entail?
Yeah, it's something that we designate players with that kind of alluded to what I just said. They have the same kind of core beliefs and just the mentality that we believe in here. So we assign that when it's appropriate to people through the draft process, and it just gives us an indication that this is our kind of guy, you know. And you know, that's definitely part of the process for us is looking for those kind of people.
All right, well, we have heard of the franchise tag. We have heard of the transition tag. We have heard of laser tag. Now we have the Commander tag. So on this show, we'll do a lot on what the Commanders did in the 2024 NFL draft beyond taking LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels with the number 2 overall pick. And then I will react to the introductory press conference for Daniels. That took place on Friday afternoon. Some very good stuff from Daniels during that presser, and an interesting reveal by Adam Peters during that presser. Peters, by the way, working furiously to sign undrafted free agents, among those with whom the team reportedly has agreed on a deal, Notre Dame quarterback Sam Hartman That news broke on Saturday evening via multiple reports. Also on the show, I will talk Capitals, Nationals, and Orioles. Yes, this is not just a Commanders installment of the podcast. I'll give you my thoughts on the Caps 3-1 loss to the New York Rangers at Capital One Arena on Friday night to go down 3-0 in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I'll examine the Nats winning the first two games of a four-game series at the Miami Marlins, including an 11-4 win on Saturday. And I'll sort through the O's splitting the first two games of a three-game series against the Oakland A's at Oriole Park at Camden Yards, including a 7-0 win on Saturday. And yes, I will address the O's optioning the consensus number one prospect in baseball, second baseman slash shortstop Jackson Holliday, back to AAA Norfolk. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me, the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. A lot of feedback on the Commanders' now concluded 2024 draft from CD from Virginia on X. This new Commanders tight end, Sinnott, was not on my radar, but his highlights make him look like an absolute dog. Thank you for that, CD. And he writes dog as D-A-W-G. You know, there are many ways to spell dog, are there not? There's the traditional way, D-O-G. There's the Snoop Dogg way, D-O-double-G. And there is the sports way, D-A-W-G. And yes, there is a good bit to like about Ben Sinnott. Wait until you hear what Adam Peters had to say about Ben Sinnott. But it is a funny thing, isn't it? Like, so many of these guys who get taken in NFL drafts, most people have never heard of. People go on YouTube, they look at a few highlights of the guy, and these people arrive at determinations on these players via just a few minutes worth of YouTube highlights. I always get a kick out of that. From Dave on X, best player available. This is a long-term approach. We aren't winning much this year. Build the right way. Thank you for that, Dave. I am a big fan of the best player available approach when it comes to the NFL draft. I am a big fan of the long-term approach. I am a big fan of building the right way. But I would say this, if this Commanders 2024 draft was what we wanted this draft to be, then it may be that the Commanders are winning a good bit this coming season. We'll see. A lot to be determined, but I would not be dismissive of the notion of the Commanders in the 2024 season being better than people might think. If Jaden Daniels is who we want him to be and is that player from the get-go, and I believe that he could be, then the Commanders very much can have a winning 2024 season. From Orange Joe 82 on X, I have hope. Right now, that's all that I can ask for. Hope. It's something we as fans have not had for nearly two decades. Thank you for that, Orange Joe. Email from Jim D on our new normal as Washington fans. Writes Jim, I wanted to turn your attention to something that I noticed recently. On the Commanders team website, I'm sure that you remember that in the past, anybody associated with the organization, from the ownership to the team president, to business staff, to players, to coaches, had his or her face displayed for all to see. But now if you look, the business staff and ownership have been limited to lists while only players, coaches, and broadcasters are pictured. I don't know if this was intentional, but a message has been sent. Even with Top Golf Gate and Ben Johnson and whatever other drama that has gone on this offseason, the most refreshing aspect is that it is finally, exclusively, just about football. We must remind ourselves of this blessing often. Thank you for the email, Jim. That is a very interesting change, and I don't think that it is at all unreasonable to think that that change is about focusing on football. There with our team in recent years has been way too much conversation about non-football stuff, right? I am all for the team trying to refocus attention on football if, in fact, that is what is happening. I mean, consider this, and I've thought about this. When is the last time that we heard from team president Jason Wright? We, over the last few years, heard from Jason a ton. The name change, The sale of the team, the stadium search, ticket sales, even football stuff. Remember when Jason in August 2022 on Twitter yelled at our friend Scott Abraham, now the sports director for 7 News DC, for his line of questioning in a one-on-one interview with quarterback Carson Wentz? Well, we this offseason have barely heard from Jason Wright. You got to wonder if that's due to a directive from managing partner Josh Harris. And if that is due to a directive from Harris, I am all for that directive. Focus on football. Well, in much the same way that Josh Harris runs the Commanders, Dr. George Verghese runs the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland. Dr. Verghese is a big Commanders fan. He is a board-certified dermatologist and Mohs surgeon. He is one of the nation's premier dermatologists, and operating under his direction is the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland, which has locations in Waldorf, Maryland, Leonardtown, Maryland, and Lexington Park, Maryland. Whatever your dermatological needs may be, call 301-396-3401 and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. The Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland focuses on medical skin care, cosmetic procedures, and skin cancer diagnosis and comprehensive care. If you are dealing with skin cancer or have dealt with skin cancer or want to get screened for skin cancer, contact Dr. George Verghese and the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland. Heck, Dr. Verghese and the Institute offer free skin cancer screenings to anyone considered a new patient. And Dr. Verghese and the Institute offer advanced treatments for skin cancer, including painless and scarless skin cancer treatment. Also, if you are dealing with allergic reactions, if you're dealing with acne, psoriasis, or eczema, if you're interested in procedures like Botox, laser hair removal, or chemical peels, contact Dr. George Verghese and the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland. Whatever your dermatological needs may be, call 301-396-3401. That's 301-396-3401, and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. You can also visit midatlanticskin.com. That's midatlanticskin.com. Just make sure that you tell Dr. Verghese and the Institute that Al Galdi sent you. For excellent and comprehensive skin care, contact Dr. George Verghese and the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland, and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. Well, the Commanders 2024 NFL draft class features 9 players, 4 offensive players, and 5 defensive players. 7 of the 9 players were team captains. Do you remember how leadership became this offsided trait that the team was looking for in its head coaching search this offseason? Well, leadership is a common trait of players taken by the team in the 2024 NFL draft. We on Friday night had rounds 2 and 3 of the draft. We on Saturday afternoon and evening had rounds of 4 through 7 of the draft. This segment, I'm going to discuss the defensive players taken by the Commanders over the final 2 days of the draft. And next segment, I'll talk about the offensive players taken by the Commanders over the final 2 days of the draft. The Commanders on Friday night took Illinois interior defensive lineman Johnny Newton in the second round of the 2024 NFL draft with the number 36 overall pick in the draft. Now, this pick immediately sent some people into tantrum because this was a pick for a position at which the Commanders have 2 obvious starters in Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne. And to that I say, that is exactly why I loved this pick. This pick was a classic best player available pick. This pick was a classic BPA pick, a classic BIPA pick. I am a big proponent of BPA. BPA is the way. Drafting for need is not the way to go because needs change. Needs change based on all kinds of things, injuries, surprising performances, etc. The best way to do the NFL draft is to consistently take the best players available. That's how you build up a roster. The Commanders getting Johnny Newton was a value pick. Newton was the number 11 overall player on Pro Football Focus's big board for the 2024 NFL Draft, and yet the Commanders took him with the number 36 overall pick in the draft. Johnny Newton is impressive. He's a big dude. Newton on February 29th at the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis measured as being 6'1 and 5/8 of an inch and 304 pounds. He was a very productive player for Illinois, played for Illinois for four seasons, 2020 through 2023. He, over his final two collegiate seasons, registered an overall grade for Pro Football Focus of 91.8, which ranked number 2 among all qualified Power 5 conference interior defensive linemen during that span. PFF grades were on a scale of 0 to 100. Newton was the 2023 Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year and was a consensus first-team All-American for the 2023 season. Newton for the 2023 regular season, it was tied for number 1 among all interior defensive linemen in the FBS in quarterback pressures per Pro Football Focus at 44. He is coming off injury. Newton this past January underwent surgery for a partial Jones fracture in a foot. Commanders General Manager Adam Peters did a press conference late night on Friday night. This was Peters on Johnny Newton.
Johnny, we could not believe he was still there, and we were a little nervous that he wasn't going to make it to us at 36. We looked at moving up to get him. Very surprising. We had a first round grade on him, and he is an explosive, violent player. He's a team captain. He got the commander tag, and he's exactly who we want to bring in this building. We think he's an advanced player. He can come in and play right away. Really a three down player. He can play on the rundowns, play on pass downs, skilled, hands and feet are tied together, and he arrives violently when he gets the ball, and he plays just like we want him to play. So just thrilled to get Johnny, and that started off a really good night for us.
Notable that Adam Peters right there referred to Johnny Newton as a three-down player and as someone who can play right away. Peters on Friday night on spending a second-round pick on an interior defensive lineman and Johnny Newton while already having two quality interior defensive linemen in Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne.
You know, I think everybody, when you pick a guy like Johnny Newton, you know, we have two great players on the inside, and we have two other really, really good football players, too, in that defensive tackle group. And so then really behind them, we have some good players, too. So at first glance, you think it's a pretty packed room, but I don't think you can. That's what I learned in San Francisco is you can't have too many great D linemen, and we'll find a way to get them all on the field. I know DQ, and that's what I said to DQ is like, can we do this? He's like, yeah, we'll find a way to get them all on the field. Talk with Joe Witt, and he was all about it because really Johnny was, you know, certainly clearly higher than anybody else we had on the board there. So everybody was on board, and that was cool. It was a cool process really throughout, and really appreciate everybody's willingness to listen and give their opinions. And I think that's how you have successful drafts.
Yes, it is. Very well said. And something to consider with Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne is this. They play on a lot of defensive snaps. A guy like Johnny Newton can spell John and Daron. Perhaps less is more with John and Daron, especially with each guy coming off a 2023 season that was not his best. And specific to John, he during the 2023 season was banged up. As he gets older, him not playing as much as he has been might be best for him. More from Adam Peters on Friday night on drafting best player available versus drafting for need.
I think you always want to blend that, you know, and blend, you know, your needs and your best player available. And I think it's case by case basis. Every time you get up there and it's about to be your pick, we sit there and we discuss and say, all right, we have these X amount of players, we want to do this. My phone was ringing off the hook. There was a time where it was pretty hectic between right around the beginning, really all day it was ringing. And then there's a lot going on there. So you try to, you know, you delegate those jobs, and we had a lot of great people in there taking the trade calls, doing the trade calculator. Okay, what way this versus this? But really, case by case, you do what's best for the team, I think, and at least what you think is best for the team. And really, we have a lot of really smart people in there to help make that decision.
All right. The Commanders on Friday night made a trade with the NFC East rival Philadelphia Eagles. So the Commanders traded their second 2024 second round pick, the number 40 overall pick, a 2024 third round pick, the number 78 overall pick, and a 2024 fifth round pick, the number 152 overall pick, which was acquired from the Seattle Seahawks in the trading of quarterback Sam Howell, to the Eagles for two 2024 second round picks, the numbers 50 and 53 overall picks, and a 2024 fifth round pick, the number 161 overall pick. Now, the Commanders at 40 could have taken a corner who I know a lot of fans of the team wanted, Iowa corner Cooper DeJean. Clearly, Adam Peters thought differently. The Commanders traded out of that spot. The Eagles took DeJean. And the Commanders took Michigan corner Mike Sainristil in the second round of the 2024 NFL Draft with that number 50 overall pick in the draft. Mike Sainristil. This was another value pick. Sainristil was the number 34 overall player on the Pro Football Focus big board for the 2024 NFL Draft, and yet the Commanders took him with the number 50 overall pick in the draft. You by now may well have seen or heard about this, but the great Nick Saban, who is working as a college football analyst for ESPN, the legendary former Alabama, LSU, and Michigan State head coach, Nick Saban. He is part of ESPN's coverage of day two of the 2024 NFL draft, raved about Mike Sainristil. Quote, "This guy may be pound for pound the best football player in this draft." End quote. Quite the endorsement from the Nicktator. Mike Sainristil is an interesting story. He is a converted receiver. He played for Michigan for five seasons, 2019 through 2023. He, for his first three collegiate seasons, was a receiver. He, for his final two collegiate seasons, was a defensive back. He was viewed as one of the best slot corners in the 2024 NFL draft. Now, he is a smaller guy. He, on March 1st at the NFL Scouting Combine, measured as being 5'9 and 3/8 of an inch and 182 pounds, but also as having a wingspan of 74 and a half inches. Sainristil, over his two seasons as a defensive back for Michigan, for Pro Football Focus, played on 1,372 defensive snaps. He played slot corner on 985 of those defensive snaps. So a lot of experience at slot corner over two seasons as a defensive back. He, for the 2023 season, led Michigan with six interceptions and set a single season program record with 232 interception return yards, as he had two pick sixes. And he is a leader. He was a team captain for Michigan for the 2022 and 2023 seasons, and Michigan won the College Football Playoff National Championship for the 2023 season. He was a team captain for the College Football National Champion for this past season. Adam Peters on Friday night on Mike Sainristil.
Moving to Mikey Sainristil, another captain, and another one where we were pretty nervous there, because as it was coming down to him, I mean, that's what we had our sights set on. And Mikey is a guy who's impressed myself for a really long time since he was a freshman, seeing him catch passes. And he transitioned to corner and playing nickel, and had six interceptions last year, and was really the heart and soul of that Michigan team. I think anybody will even tell you. I know JJ had a big part in that too, but I think anybody will tell you Mikey, as much as anybody, was a team leader. And I think what sealed the deal with us is when we went to the pro day, and He was incredible doing the DB drills, and then he was the best one on offense doing the receiver drills. Outstanding route runner, outstanding ball skills, and he could just go all day. And the night before, we had dinner with him, and he was as impressive off the field as he was on the field. So we are thrilled to get him. He'll be a great nickel.
Adam Peters on Mike Sanders, though, quote, "That's who we had our sights set on." End quote. Again, Peters was not eyeing Cooper DeJean the way that many Commanders fans were eyeing Cooper DeJean. Call me crazy, but I'll trust Adam Peters' draft evaluations over at TakeCommand454 on X. All right. Although, yes, Eagles executive vice president and general manager Howie Roseman is awesome at doing the NFL draft, and he wanted Cooper DeJean. That is true. Adam Peters on Friday night on making a trade with a division rival in the Eagles.
Yeah, that's, there's always, you have that in the back of your mind. But Howie's a friend. Howie's, he came with a strong offer, Sam, and really it was a favorable in terms of the point chart, favorable for us. But really, we liked it in terms of what it gave us, and given those two picks in 50 and 53. You know, a lot of times you have to move really far back, and that one we had to move 10 picks back, but then we also got another pick where we moved really far up, where that either you could sit there and pick at 53 or you have optionality to move back again and pick up some more picks. So we liked how that pick lined up for us in terms of where our board was. So you always think, you know, and he was very convicted in doing that. So kudos to him for having that, for having the conviction to do that. But you know, we're going to be playing Cooper DeJean. So we'll see what happens. And you never know who's going to win those trades. And I don't think you can even really figure that out for years down the line.
No, you can't. Adam Peters on Friday night did make it clear that Mike Sanders still will be a nickel corner for the Commanders. Here was that.
So Mikey's going to play inside. He's going to be a nickel. We call it a star. And Mikey, maybe he is in stature. He might be smaller, but he is as physical as they come. He'll bring it every time. He's tough. He's extremely smart. And many things he does really well, but he takes the ball away. And he had six interceptions this year. I can't imagine anybody's in his class in terms of ball skills on the defensive side of the ball. He's got incredible ball skills, and that's what we look for, is speed and ball skills and his instincts. And so we believe in him to be a really, really good player as a nickel.
There were Commanders fans mad that the team in the second round of the 2024 NFL draft did not take an offensive tackle because of how much of a need offensive tackle is for the team. Again, you should not draft for need. But if we are going to play the need game, consider this. Could you not say that corner was arguably a bigger need than offensive tackle? I mean, statistically speaking, the Commanders' cornerback play last season was worse than the team's offensive tackle play last season was. The team's cornerback play last season was wretched. The team needed and still needs help at corner. So from that perspective, Mike Sanders still did address a need. Defensive players taken by the Commanders on day three of the 2024 NFL draft. The Commanders took Temple linebacker Jordan McGee in the fifth round with the number 139 overall pick in the draft. The Commanders took Washington safety Dominique Hampton in the fifth round with the number 161 overall pick in the draft, and the Commanders took Notre Dame edge defender Javonte Jean-Baptiste in the seventh round with the number 222 overall pick in the draft. The day three defensive player for the Commanders who most stands out to me is Jordan McGee, the linebacker out of Temple. McGee was a part of the Temple program for five seasons, 2019 through 2023. He is very athletic. McGee registered a relative athletic score, a RAS of 9.6. That ranks 117th out of 2,889 linebacker prospects from 1987 through 2024. Also, McGee, per the NFL's Next Gen Stats, had the number one athleticism score among all linebackers in the 2024 NFL Draft. Commanders Assistant General Manager Lance Newmark did a post-draft press conference on Saturday evening. This was Newmark on Jordan McGee.
So McGee from Temple, you know, a guy that we really liked, you know, through the process. You know, both sides, scouting staff was very excited about him. Coaching side was very excited about him. I'm sure you've seen a lot of reports on the athlete himself in terms of, you know, testing and numbers. A long, rangy, athletic, you know, guy that can really cover ground. You know, a captain, a guy that kind of fits that commander mold a little bit in terms of mindset, you know, just very dedicated to the game, kind of lives and breathes football. It really hit on a lot of, checked on a lot of boxes for us, and you know, really excited to get him.
All right, and this was Lance Newmark on Saturday evening on Dominique Hampton.
Dominique Hampton, a really intriguing prospect. Kind of a unique body type. He's played safety. He's got some linebacker traits. A lot of versatility. A lot of ways that pick can go for us. We were really excited about getting that athlete in our building. Long, fast, big time testing numbers in the process. Physical, competitive. Like I said, he's got a lot of experience, kind of in different roles on defense. And we had a vision for how we would be able to use him both short term and long term. You know, he's got very high upside on special teams as well. So a really exciting developmental athlete for us.
Okay, and one more for you from Lance Newmark. Here was our guy, Lance, on Saturday evening on Javonte Jean-Baptiste.
Jean-Baptiste, another guy that long, athletic, you know, another guy that loves football. Very excited about his opportunity here. It was a great phone call when we picked him. He was very, very excited and very emotional, and just really excited to add the length, the athleticism, the pass rush upside. There's just a lot of athletic traits in those, in really all those picks today that we're excited about.
Well, it is worth noting that the perception of the players available on day three of the 2024 NFL draft was not exactly sky high. We had the following from NFL insider Albert Breer of the MMQB on X on Saturday afternoon. Quote, a reminder for day three of the draft. Most NFL folks I've talked to believe the quality of the class collapses after round four. It's the effect of NIL and the portal keeping guys in school. Just 58 underclassmen declared was 130 in 21. End quote. Something to keep in mind. Well, something to always keep in mind is that if you have a case, you should contact Paulson and Nace. Paulson and Nace is a Washington, D.C.-based family law firm that handles medical malpractice, personal injury, birth injury, legal malpractice, and consumer protection cases, offering aggressive advocacy for victims in Washington, D.C., and West Virginia. Chris Nace, Matt Nace, and the rest of the team do excellent work. If you feel that you've been wronged, if you think that you've been wronged, but aren't sure, call Paulson and Nace and schedule a no-obligation appointment. Call 202-902-7611. That's 202-902-7611. And when you call, tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. Paulson and Nace has recovered millions of dollars for the sick and injured. Consider this. Paulson and Nace has taken on Big Pharma and won. Two verdicts versus Merrill Dow totaling $132 million. Also, Paulson and Nace took on the U.S. government and won. Bradley versus the United States of America. Paulson and Nace won a case for which the United States government had to pay nearly $1.8 million. If you have a case, contact Paulson and Nace. Call 202-902-7611. 202-902-7611. When you call, tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. You could also visit PaulsonandNace.com. Just don't forget to tell Paulson and Nace that Al Galdi sent you. Paulson and Nace, when tragedy happens, let the family of Paulson and Nace take care of your family.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is four missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling three-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour three-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hey, thank you to all of you who have given this podcast a five-star rating and who have written nice reviews of the podcast. You on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify can rate the podcast. Five-star ratings are very much appreciated, and you on Apple Podcasts can write a review saying that you like the podcast. The review does not have to be long, can be just a sentence or two, but the ratings and the reviews help us out a lot, so thank you very much for doing them. We move now to discussing the offensive players who the Commanders took over the final 2 days of the 2024 NFL Draft, a.k.a. the pieces who can help Jaden Daniels Cook, the pieces who can help the player who the team took with the number 2 overall pick in this draft, LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels Cook. The Commanders on Friday night took Kansas State tight end Ben Sinnott in the second round of the 2024 NFL Draft with the number 53 overall pick in the draft. The last name is pronounced Sinnott, not Sinnott, as you may have heard, Sinnott. Sinnott was a member of the Kansas State football program for 4 seasons. He, in the 2020 season, did not play in any actual games, but he, over his final 3 collegiate seasons, 2021 through 2023, played in 38 games and totaled 82 receptions for 1,138 yards and 10 touchdowns. Sinnott was only the number 105 player on the Pro Football Focus big board for the 2024 NFL Draft, but he obviously is someone who Commanders General Manager Adam Peters likes. This was Peters during his press conference on Friday night on Ben Sinnott.
You know, from my experience at the 49ers, learning from those guys and learning what they look for in tight ends with Coach Shanahan, Kyle, and everybody there, just seeing, and you know, it's a lofty comparison, and I'm not comparing him to the guys we had in San Francisco, but he reminds me of guys like Kyle Juszczyk and George Kittle, the way he blocks and the way he moves and just the way he competes. And certainly not, you know, putting him in that, you know, those guys are all pros, Pro Bowlers, everything you'd want, but Ben has that same mindset, and he plays with that mindset. He can block really anywhere. You can put him in at the end of the line of scrimmage. You can block a DN. You can block a linebacker. You can block a defensive back in space. You'll block two people on the same play. If you saw that highlight, that was pretty cool. He can play fullback and block people on the second level. So he can do anything you want in the run game. And in the pass game, he's got great hands. Can get open. He can beat man coverage. And he's got that mindset when he gets the ball in his hands, he's not going down. So he's got everything we're looking for in a commander as well.
All right. How about that? Adam Peters right there flirting with comparing Ben Sinnott with San Francisco 49ers tight end George Kittle and Niners fullback Kyle Juszczyk, two excellent players. The Commanders taking Ben Sinnott with the number 53 overall pick in the 2024 NFL Draft marks the highest that Washington has taken a tight end into the NFL Draft since taking Fred Davis with the number 48 overall pick in the 2008 NFL Draft. Tight end is not a position on which Washington has spent a lot of draft capital. Now, tight end isn't necessarily a position on which a team needs to spend a lot of draft capital. There are a lot of good tight ends who are taken on day twos and day threes of NFL drafts. The Commanders on Friday night took TCU offensive tackle Brandon Coleman in the third round of the 2024 NFL Draft, with the number 67 overall pick in the draft. Is Brandon Coleman the Commanders' starting left tackle for week one of the 2024 season? Is Brandon Coleman the blind side protector for Jaden Daniels? Brandon Coleman is big and athletic. He on March 3rd at the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis measured as being 6'4 and 4/8 of an inch and 313 pounds. Coleman registered a relative athletic score, a RAS of 9.98, which ranked number 4 out of 1,450 guard prospects from 1987 through 2024. I'm not sure why his RAS category ended up being the guard department. Coleman was a very good player for TCU. He played for TCU for four seasons, 2020 through 2023. He primarily played left tackle and left guard. Coleman, in his 2023 senior season, made 11 starts with 7 at left tackle and 4 at left guard. And Coleman, in his 2022 junior season, made 15 starts, all at left tackle. Coleman, in his career at TCU, allowed just 54 quarterback pressures and just 3 sacks over 1,307 pass blocking snaps per Pro Football Focus. Not too shabby. 3 sacks allowed over 1,307 pass blocking snaps. Adam Peters on Friday night on Brandon Coleman.
Brandon Coleman's another team captain, and he really impressed us. We had him in here on a 30 visit. Really loved his story, and he's got over 1,600 snaps at tackle. He also played guard. We see him as a tackle, and we think he could be a really good tackle. He's really experienced. He's got heavy hands. He's a really good athlete. So we were really fortunate to get him where we got him.
Will Brandon Coleman be the Commander starting left tackle for week one of the 2024 season? More from Adam Peters on Friday night on Coleman.
Yeah, Brandon, I think, will come in and compete, you know, just like everybody else. And we certainly think he has what it takes to be a tackle in this league. And he's got the feed, he's got the speed, he's got the strength, and he's got the intelligence. So, and he's got the right mindset. And so he'll come in and compete just like everybody else.
Well, it sure sounds like Brandon Coleman has a real shot to be the Commander starting left tackle for week one of the 2024 season. He and Cornelius Lucas figure to be in competition for that starting left tackle job. Although, remember, there's always more that could be done in free agency. Washington in May 2021 signed Charles Leno Jr. as an unrestricted free agent off him having been released by the Chicago Bears, and Leno ended up being Washington's starting left tackle for the next 3 seasons. So the left tackle competition may not be entirely set just yet. And then the third of the three offensive players taken by the Commanders over the final 2 days of the 2024 NFL Draft was a receiver. The Commanders on Friday night took Rice receiver Luke McCaffrey in the third round of the draft with the number 100 overall pick in the draft. McCaffrey played college football for 5 seasons. He played for Nebraska for the 2019 and 2020 seasons and played for Rice for the 2021 through 2023 seasons. But he, over his first 3 collegiate seasons, 2019 through 2021, was essentially a combo quarterback running back. He, over his final 2 collegiate seasons, 2022 and 2023, was essentially a combo receiver running back. He is a bigger receiver. McCaffrey, on March 2nd at the NFL Scouting Combine, measured as being 6'1 and 5/8 of an inch and 198 pounds. The Commanders have needed size at receiver. Luke McCaffrey provides that. There is the last name. He is the son of former New York Giants and Denver Broncos receiver Ed McCaffrey. Easy Ed McCaffrey. And Luke McCaffrey is the brother of San Francisco 49ers and former Carolina Panthers running back Christian McCaffrey. Adam Peters on Friday night on Luke McCaffrey.
Near and dear to my heart with the McCaffrey family. They're an incredible family. But it's a great way. You know, it's certainly a bonus when you draft somebody to know that. But Luke earned that. And Luke was a captain at Rice as well. He had took a road less traveled where he started off as a quarterback and really taught himself how to be one of the best receivers in the country in the last 2 years. So he's got size, he's got speed, he's got great movement skills, and I think he's only going to ascend. We're really, really excited to have him in the building.
And this was Adam Peters, the former 49ers executive, on Friday night on if he, from Christian McCaffrey, got intel on Luke McCaffrey.
I did get a little insight from his brother. I got a little encouragement from his brother, but I didn't need it. I can tell you that right now. I didn't need it. Just watching him ascend from really Nebraska and watching him play what he did there, and it's actually really fun just watching it chronologically and how he evolved at every step of the way until really the Senior Bowl, when he was outstanding at the Senior Bowl, being able to get open, and if he wasn't open, he was making contested catches. He's almost 6'2", which is you're surprised because he moves so well for a guy that's almost 6'2". He moves like a guy who's maybe 5'10" in terms of his quickness. He's got incredible shuttle numbers, and where you're talking about the 3-cone and the 20-yard shuttle, and those numbers really show up on the tape. And he's tough, he's got great hands, and he's got incredible mindset. Seeing him get better and better throughout the process, it tells us that he's only going to get better.
And there is opportunity on the Commanders at receiver after Terry McLaurin. There are so many question marks for the team at receiver. Luke McCaffrey has a real chance to make an instant impact. And keep this in mind, Terry McLaurin, right? A 2019 third round pick. Luke McCaffrey, a 2024 third round pick. Plenty of reason for excitement with this Commanders 2024 NFL draft class. Plenty of reason for excitement with what Nova Fireplace and Stove right now is offering to listeners of the Al Galdi podcast who live in Northern Virginia. Multiple great deals. Deal number one, $25 off any gas fireplace service, chimney cleaning, or chimney inspection. There's no need to go into next heating season unprepared. Get prepared now and at a discounted price. And deal number two, a Commander's Draft Special for those of you with masonry fireplaces, an in-stock wood insert for the extremely discounted price of just $5,300. The usual price is $9,000. And that price of $5,300 includes installation, permit, and county/city inspection. There are just 2 in-stock wood inserts left. So call now to get yours. Call 571 513 3803. Talk to Stuart Moore. He is the general manager. He's a big Commanders fan. He is a loyal listener of this podcast. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you to get the special offers. Nova Fireplace and Stove is outstanding. It is family owned. It is a 5-star dealer. Nova Fireplace and Stove also installs generators, water heaters, security lights, and custom outdoor kitchens. There is so much that Nova Fireplace and Stove can do for you. Visit NovaFireplaceAndStove.com to check out customer reviews. Contact Nova Fireplace and Stove and get the customer service that you deserve. 571-513-3803. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you to get the special offers. That's Nova Fireplace and Stove, 571-513-3803. And make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. There is a lot more to the Commanders 2024 NFL draft class beyond the team taking LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels with the number 2 overall pick in the first round, but no player in the class matters as much as Daniels. How he does is going to define this class in so many ways. The first round of the draft was on Thursday night. The Commanders held an introductory press conference for Daniels on Friday afternoon. Commanders General Manager Adam Peters, during this press conference, unsolicited, said that Jaden Daniels was the highest-rated player on the Commanders draft board. This was Peters during his press conference opening statement.
Like I told some of you guys who were here last night, we're getting a special, special player. Jaden was the highest ranked player on our entire draft board. But even more so, we're getting a special, special person.
All right. So Adam Peters, quote, Jaden was the highest ranked player on our entire draft board, end quote. Now, does that mean that Jaden Daniels was the highest ranked player on the Commanders draft board at the time of the number 2 overall pick? Or does that mean that Daniels was the highest ranked player on the Commanders draft board going into the draft? In other words, did the Commanders have Jaden Daniels as the QB1 in the draft, ahead of the man who was widely viewed as the QB1 in the draft? USC's Caleb Williams. Whatever the case, Adam Peters really likes Jaden Daniels. That has become crystal clear. And Peters, by his own admission, during his post-first round press conference late night on Thursday night, essentially said that Daniels was the pick at 2 all along, but also that Peters did want to adhere to a process by which that feeling could be confirmed, and that feeling was confirmed. I liked what we got from Jaden Daniels at this introductory press conference on Friday afternoon. Daniels, in previous interviews and media avails, had to me come off reserved, had come off quiet. Daniels, since being drafted by the Commanders, has come off in a different way. He on Thursday night did a brief virtual press conference. He on Friday afternoon did this introductory press conference. And he, during each presser, came off confident, came off poised, but also came off humble. My favorite thing from Jaden Daniels on Friday afternoon came via this exchange between Commanders insider Stephen Wino of the Associated Press and Daniels. Take a listen.
Some quarterbacks start right away, some kind of sit and wait. How prepared do you think you are to be a pro quarterback right away?
Man, I don't know the playbook, so I'm not prepared right now.
Okay, that was a really good answer by Jaden Daniels. That answer conveyed humility. That answer conveyed self-awareness. That answer conveyed humor via self-deprecation, which itself conveys confidence. Daniels was asked, how prepared does he think he is to be a pro quarterback right now? And his answer was, quote, I don't know the playbook, so I'm not prepared right now. End quote. A terrific answer that communicated and subcommunicated many good things. Here was another good exchange during Jaden Daniels' introductory press conference on Friday afternoon. This exchange was between 7 News DC sports director Scott Abraham and Daniels.
What I loved about Adam's press conference last night, what he liked about you, he says you take the soul away from a defense. In your perspective, what does that look like when Jaden Daniels takes the soul away from a defense?
2023 Florida game.
Can you elaborate?
Just turn on the tape and watch that game.
All right, so another funny answer by Jaden Daniels. And yes, that Florida game was something. November 11th, 2023, then number 19 LSU ripped Florida 52-35. Daniels accounted for 606 total net yards of offense and 5 touchdowns. He became the first player in FBS history to have at least 350 passing yards and at least 200 rushing yards in a game. Jaden Daniels has the skill set to be what Washington has not had in decades, a franchise quarterback. He, by all indications, has the work ethic to be a franchise quarterback. Whether he actually becomes a franchise quarterback is, of course, dependent on a variety of factors, but the foundation for him to be a franchise quarterback is there. Daniels on Friday afternoon on why he thinks that he is ready to be a franchise quarterback.
I mean, God put me in this place for a reason. You know, my life is already written out. He got a plan. I'm just following it. But that comes with the work at the end of the day. Nothing is given to me. It's not a given. I'm a starter week one. I got to go out. I got to earn it. You know, I got to put in the work. I got to learn the playbook, earn the respect of my teammates, and, you know, go out there and try to win football games.
And did what stood out to me in that cut right there stand out to you? Jaden Daniels quote, "It's not a given. I'm a starter week one. I got to go out and I got to earn it." End quote. That's awesome. That's exactly what you want to hear. Now, Jaden Daniels should be the Commander starting quarterback for week one of the 2024 season. Something is wrong if he isn't the Commander starting quarterback for week one of the 2024 season. You do not spend a number two overall pick in an NFL draft on a quarterback who was a QB1 in college for 5 seasons for that guy to not be your starting quarterback for week one of his rookie season. But Daniels on Friday afternoon saying that he has to earn being the team starting quarterback was exactly the right thing to say. He, in this introductory press conference, did a really good job of balancing being humble with being confident. Press conferences, of course, are just words. Actions matter much more than words. We, over the years, have seen plenty of Washington players and coaches have good introductory press conferences with our team, only to not work out with our team. But I liked what we heard from Jaden Daniels on Friday afternoon. Well, the Capitals 2023-2024 season could end on Sunday night. The Caps host the New York Rangers on Sunday night at 8 for Game 4 of the team's best-of-7 first-round series in the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Caps are down in the series 3-0 as the Caps lost to the Rangers 3-1 at Capital One Arena on Friday night. What is happening with the Caps defense corps is ridiculous. The Caps on Friday night lost yet another defenseman. Defenseman Trevor Van Riemsdyk, the man known as TVR. His status now is TBD. He left the game due to an upper body injury that he suffered on a hit by Rangers forward Matt Rempe in the first period as Van Riemsdyk in the Caps defensive zone got smashed into the boards behind the net by Rempe, who received a 2-minute minor for interference as opposed to a 5-minute major for what sure looked like a headshot. I don't get how and why Rempe did not get a 5-minute major for, again, what sure appeared to be a headshot. This was Caps head coach Spencer Carberry during a session with reporters on Saturday on the Rempe hit on Van Riemsdyk on Friday night.
I think it's really close on a bunch of different fronts, from the interference charging late. it's such a fine line because the game is so fast and the physicality is such an important part of the game of hockey in the NHL. But there is a line, right? And player safety is a big, big issue with our league and protecting players and the players' onus on them. It's tight. It's really, really tight. So I don't know. I haven't heard anything on supplemental discipline or how they're handling that. But it is because he just turns. I mean, I don't know if there's a set amount of time that they put on a stop clock of when a guy gets rid of a puck. And then it's 1-1000, 2-1000, and bang, if it – but that – yeah, really close.
Really close at best. But bottom line, Trevor Van Riemsdyk now is out, joining an already lengthy list. Defenseman Vincent Iorio has been out due to an upper body injury that he suffered on a hit by Rangers forward Alexi Lafreniere in the second period of the Caps 4-1 loss at the Rangers in Game 1 last Sunday afternoon, April 21st. Defenseman Nick Jensen has been out due to injury that he suffered in taking a nasty hit from Tampa Bay Lightning forward Michael Asimont in the Caps 4-2 win over the Eastern Conference wildcard-winning Lightning at Capital One Arena on April 13th. Defenseman Rasmus Sandin has been out due to an upper body injury that he suffered in the Caps 3-2 overtime loss to the Ottawa Senators at Capital One Arena on April 7th. And defenseman Ethan Bear remains out due to being in the NHL's and NHL Players Association's Player Assistance Program. So we have the Caps as the last playoff team in the Eastern Conference, the second wildcard team in the conference, down to the mighty Rangers, the Metropolitan Division-winning and President's Trophy-winning Rangers 3-0. We have the Caps' defense corps depleted big time, and we have other problems for the Caps. Their power play is in a bad way. The Caps on Friday night went 0-for-6 on the power play, falling to just 2-for-15 on the power play in the series. And the Caps on Friday night gave up a shorthanded goal for a second consecutive game. They gave up a shorthanded goal to Rangers forward Barkley Goodrow, 8:08 into the first period, for a 2-1 Rangers lead. Goodrow scored on a snapshot in the low slot on a 2-on-1 breakaway with top-line left wing Alex Ovechkin as the Caps' only defender. As defenseman John Carlson jumped into the play and left Ovechkin all by himself. We love Ovi, but he is not known for his defensive prowess. And, you know, you look at Carlson, so he already plays a lot of minutes. He now is playing even more minutes due to the state of the Caps' defense corps. Carlson on Friday night played for a ridiculous 30 minutes, 30 seconds. He played for more than half of the game. And this is Carlson's age 34 season. Now, yes, he for the 2023-2024 regular season was number one among all qualified NHL players in time on ice per game. That is true, but still, he is playing a ton right now. This was Spencer Carberry during his post-game press conference on Friday night on this latest shorthanded goal given up by the Caps.
It's tough, right? Like, we're trying to do the right thing. We're trying to put a puck in there, but we just were exposed because we've got one guy back off a spray. So, yeah, some of those situations and our lack of foot speed obviously is a huge, huge issue in that department.
And how about that blunt speak? How about that real talk from Spencer Carberry right there? Quote, our lack of foot speed obviously is a huge issue in that department, end quote. Carberry saying that the Caps are slow, which they are, but he's the head coach. You don't normally hear a head coach say something like that. I mentioned Alex Ovechkin. He on Friday night had no points for a third time in three games in this series. He did have four shots on goal. He did have a game-high 7 total shot attempts, but no points for Ovi in this series. That is bad, especially considering the Caps' lack of overall scoring. This Caps team does not score many goals. We know that. So when the team's top goal scorer in Alex Ovechkin is not producing points, That is a problem. And then there is the Caps goaltender, Charlie Lindgren. Our guy, the Outlaw. Now, has he been the Caps' biggest problem in this series? No. But he has not been great. Lindgren on Friday night snapped just 19 of the 22 shots on goal that he faced. He, per natural stat trick, stopped just 2 of the 5 high danger shots on goal that he faced. He did stop all 8 of the medium danger shots on goal that he faced and did stop all 8 of the low danger shots on goal that he faced. But understand, the Caps won the puck possession battle, so it's not like Lindgren was bombarded in Game 3. The Caps had 29 shots on goal to the Rangers' 22, and per natural stat trick had 45 on 5 shot attempts to the Rangers' 31, including 8 5 on 5 high danger shot attempts to the Rangers' 2, and yet the Caps lost the game. The Caps went just 3 of 4 on the penalty kill. The last team in the Stanley Cup playoffs to overcome a 3-0 series deficit and win that series was the 2013-2014 Los Angeles Kings. They, in the first round of the 2014 Stanley Cup playoffs, overcame a 3-0 series deficit to the San Jose Sharks, won that series, and then went on to win the Stanley Cup, defeating, wait for it, the Rangers. Perhaps that is a sign for the Caps, but I don't know that anybody is counting on that. Well, go figure, the Nationals' offense over the first 2 games of the team's 4-game series at the Miami Marlins. Friday night, a 3-1 win at the Marlins in a game in which all 14 of the hits in the game were singles. And that's got very good pitching in that game. And one on 8 singles, 3 walks, and 2 for 9 with runners in scoring position. Saturday, an 11-4 win at the Marlins in a game in which the Nats actually got out-hit by the Marlins 13-11. Yes, the Nats got out-hit by the Marlins 13-11, but won the game in blowout fashion 11-4. A nice win for the boys.
I'm proud of the boys.
Nats manager Davey Martinez and the boys, they are 2-0 in this 4-game series at the Marlins. The Nats in this 2024 MLB regular season now are 12-14. The Marlins in this 2024 MLB regular season now are a National League worst 6-22. The Nats on Saturday scored a very efficient 11 runs on 11 hits, which were made up of 3 home runs, a triple, a double, and 6 singles to go with 4 walks. The Nats only went 2-for-11 with runners in scoring position, but the Marlins committed 3 errors, and the Nats made the Marlins pay for those errors. The Nats scored a run in the top of the 3rd, 5 runs in the top of the 5th, a run in the top of the 6th, 3 runs in the top of the 7th, and a run in the top of the 9th. And I mentioned the Nats hitting 3 home runs. One of the homers was a grand slam. Jesse Winker, he is the Nats starting left fielder and number 2 batter, went 2-for-5 with a grand slam and an infield single on which a run scored. Winker in that Nats 5-run 5th, a 1-out grand slam to the 2nd deck in right field for a 6-1 Nats lead. Winker in the Nats 1-run 6th had a 2-out full count opposite field infield single on a well-hit grounder to the left side of the infield for a 7-1 Nats lead. Winker did not get an RBI on the hit due to a throwing error by Marlins third baseman Vidal Brujan. More on that play in a bit. But Jesse Winker, he got off to a hot start, had cooled off, but you know, he for this regular season still has some good numbers. On base percentage of .404, slugging percentage of .465. Not bad for a guy who the Nats this past February 13th signed to a minor league contract with a non-roster invitation to Major League spring training. Now, I mentioned Winker's infield single on Saturday. Scoring on that play was Jacob Young. Jacob Young in this game was in absolute terror. Young, as an Nats starting center fielder and number 9 batter, went 2-for-4 with 2 singles and a hit by pitch. He went 2-for-2 on stolen bases. He scored 4 runs. Young, in the Nats 1-run 3rd, had a 1-out infield single on a swinging bunt to the left side of the infield on a 1-2 pitch. He then, on the very next pitch, stole second base, and he then scored on a 2-out passed ball to tie the game at 1. Young in the Nats' 5-run fifth had a 1-out RBI fielder's choice grounder for a 2-1 Nats lead. Young in the Nats' 1-run sixth drew a 1-out hit by pitch. He then had to steal a second base, and he then scored on that Jesse Winker 2-out full count opposite field infield single on the well-hit grounder to the left side of the infield for a 7-1 Nats lead. And what happened on this play? Young astutely came home after Marlins first baseman Emmanuel Rivera failed to catch a two-hop throw by the third baseman Vidal Brujan, who was charged with a throwing error. But that's a catch that Rivera could have made. Now, because it was a two-hop throw, Brujan got charged with the error. But whatever, Young read that play beautifully and made it home to score that run. Young in the Nats' 1-run seventh had a 2-out first pitch grounder on which he reached first base thanks to a throwing error by Marlins shortstop Tim Anderson. And Young in the top of the ninth had a 2-out full count opposite field single through the right side of the infield. You talk about a pest. You know, that's a word that gets used in baseball sometimes. This guy is a pest. Jacob Young was a pest for the Marlins on Saturday, and to the benefit of the Nats, a tremendous performance. The impact of Jacob Young's speed really is something. This is his age 24 season. The Nats took him in the seventh round of the 2021 MLB draft out of the University of Florida. He was the Nats' 2022 Minor League Base Runner of the Year. Young was one of just two players in all of minor league baseball in the 2022 season to have at least 50 stolen bases and score at least 100 runs. Speed is a beautiful thing, and we see that with Jacob Young. Also, Trey Lipscomb, he is the Nats starting third baseman and number six batter, went 3-for-4 with a double, two singles, and a walk. And one of the singles and the walk came in the same inning. Lipscomb in the top of the second had a 2-out single to left field on a 1-2 pitch. Lipscomb in that Nats 5-run fifth had a leadoff single to left field, and he later in the inning drew a 2-out walk. And Lipscomb in the Nats 1-run ninth had a leadoff opposite field double off the right field warning track. And there were many other key offensive contributors for the Nats in this 11-4 win at the Marlins on Saturday. K-Bert Ruiz, he is the Nats starting catcher and number five batter, went 1-for-4 with a solo homer and a hit-by-pitch. K-Bert in the Nats' 3-run seventh, a leadoff homer off the left field foul pole for an 8-1 Nats lead. Nick Senzel, he is the Nats starting DH and number eight batter, went 1-for-5 with a solo homer and an RBI groundout. Senzel in the Nats' 3-run seventh had a 2-out solo homer to left field for a 9-1 Nats lead, despite having been down and a count at 1.02. The homer went a projected 409 feet per Statcast. C.J. Abrams, he is the Nats' starting shortstop and number one batter, went 1-for-4 with an RBI triple and a walk. Abrams in the Nats' 3-run seventh had a 2-out RBI triple down the right field line for a 10-1 Nats lead. Abrams for this regular season now has a slugging percentage of 624, which is exceptional. This was some of Davey Martinez's postgame session with reporters on Saturday evening. Davey talking about the Nats' offensive performance.
Winker with the big blow, you know, he put us up top, and I think the guys kind of loosened up a little bit, and they we started swinging the bats, you know, Senzel with a home run, or K-Bear with a home run. It was a good day offensively, a good day, so we got to come back and do it again tomorrow.
When you say loosened up, what does that look like, and how does that help?
Well, you saw it. I mean, hey, you know, it's nice when you can put up a four spot, you know, and take the lead like that. So they all swung the bats a lot better today. So that's awesome to see. So let's keep it going, right? I mean, the big thing is now is to keep it going. Let's get some consistency and try to go 1-0 tomorrow.
You mentioned, and you said it yesterday, you know, the bats can go like this. What is the takeaway from today? What do you hope they can replicate in future games?
You know, my biggest thing is we swung on strikes. You know, early on it wasn't as we started chasing to changeups. Later on, we could try to get the ball up a little bit and try to stay on the baseball, on the bat. Yeah, bats got a lot better. So we got to remember to do that. Hey, take our walks. You know, I think CJ had a big walk right there, you know, and got up, got on it for Winker. And but that's what it's going to take. You know, collectively as an offense, we got to do all the little things, as I talk about.
So, a very nice game for the Nats offense in this 11-4 win at the Marlins on Saturday. The Nats pitching in this game was a mixed bag. Mitchell Parker was the Nats starting pitcher. He lasted for just 4 innings. Now, he over those 4 innings allowed just 1 run, but he over those 4 innings also threw a whopping 82 pitches, although a lot of the pitches were strikes. Parker threw 55 strikes versus just 27 balls. Parker gave up 6 hits, all of which were singles. He issued 2 walks and a wild pitch. He recorded 2 strikeouts. The pitch count was the thing. Parker in the bottom of the first allowed a run on 2 singles, a walk, and a run-scoring wild pitch. He also issued a 2nd walk. He, in the inning, threw 28 pitches. Parker, in a scoreless bottom of the 2nd, in which he gave up a single, threw 17 pitches, including 10 pitches in a Brian De La Cruz plate appearance that resulted in an inning-ending groundout. Parker, in a scoreless bottom of the 3rd, in which he gave up back-to-back one-out singles, threw 27 pitches. It's kind of odd with Nats starting pitchers so far in this series. Each guy has allowed just 1 run, but the 2 starting pitchers have combined for just 9 innings. The 3-1 win at the Marlins on Friday night, Trevor Williams, 1 run in 5 innings. And Williams, unlike Parker on Saturday, threw a good number of balls. 80 pitches, 46 strikes versus 34 balls. But you certainly can work with a combined 2 runs allowed by starting pitchers over the first 2 games of a series. And by the way, Trevor Williams, he as of games through Friday, was number 10 among all qualified pitchers in the National League in ERA plus for this regular season at 150. 100 is league average. 150 is awesome. This is the same Trevor Williams who for the 2023 regular season had an ERA plus of 78. You go, Trevor Williams. As for the Nats bullpen, well, things were going so well. The 3-1 win at the Marlins on Friday night, 3 Nats relievers, Derek Law, Hunter Harvey, and Kyle Finnegan combined for 4 scoreless innings with 7 strikeouts versus no walks. The 11-4 win at the Marlins on Saturday, the first 3 Nats relievers in the game combined for 4 more scoreless innings. Jacob Barnes tossed 2 scoreless innings. Dylan Floro tossed a scoreless bottom of the 7th with 2 strikeouts, and Matt Barnes tossed a perfect bottom of the 8th. But then came Tanner Rainey, who was coming back from Tommy John surgery that he underwent in August 2022 and who is really struggling right now. He has been relegated to mop-up duty, and even that is proving to be difficult. Rainey on Saturday had yet another rough outing. He, in the bottom of the 9th, allowed 3 runs. He gave up a 1-out triple, a 1-out RBI single, a 1-out 2-run homer, and a 2-out single. Tanner Rainey now for this regular season. 10 innings pitched, 9 earned runs, 18 hits allowed, 9 walks allowed. His ERA is 8.10. His whip is 2.70. Those numbers are brutal. And you gotta wonder if some kind of a roster move with him might be coming, because this is becoming untenable. This was a blowout win. The Marlins are horrible, and Rainey still struggled. I mean, you're probably not going to find a softer landing spot for a pitcher than a circumstance like the one that Rainey was in the bottom of the 9th on Saturday, and he still got rocked. We on Saturday actually did have some roster maneuvering by the Nats. They on Saturday afternoon announced having placed first baseman slash DH Joey Gallo on the 10-day injured list with what the team called a left shoulder AC sprain. And as the corresponding roster move, the Nats recalled outfielder Alex Call from AAA Rochester. So Alex Call was brought up. Call got the call. The Nats Uber prospect, outfielder James Wood, did not get the call. The Nats are staying very disciplined in not calling up James Wood. The Nats are very much sticking to the developmental process with James Wood. There is something to be said for that. I do respect that. Joey Gallo is having a brutal season. We perhaps now have a better idea as to why. So the Nats this past January 27th officially announced having agreed with Gallo on a one-year free agent contract with a mutual option for 2025. He is a classic three true outcome batter, home runs, walks, and strikeouts. We've talked about that. But he so far in this 2024 regular season has not hit many homers, just three home runs. Now, he has drawn a team-high 15 walks, but he also has struck out a team-worst 43 times, more than double the next worst total, which is Jesse Winker's 21. Alex Call, this is his age 29 season. He has played for the Nats at the major league level the last two seasons. He, this season, had been doing fairly well for AAA Rochester, a slugging percentage of 486. But that Nats 10-day injured list now has Joey Gallo and outfielders Lane Thomas and Victor Robles. The Nats 15-day injured list has starting pitcher Josiah Gray and reliever Robert Garcia, and the Nats' 60-day injured list has starting pitcher Cade Cavalli and relievers Mason Thompson and Jose A. Ferrer. Game 3 for the Nats at the Marlins is on Sunday afternoon at 1:40. Patrick Corbin will be the Nats' starting pitcher. Well, the Orioles weekend so far has consisted of a painful loss and a comfortable win. The O's are in the midst of a three-game series against the Oakland A's at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Friday night, a 3-2, 10-inning loss to the A's. But Saturday, a 7-0 win over the A's as the O's, Joe Angel, were back in the win column.
And the Orioles again in the win column.
Yes, Joe, the win column. The O's for this 2024 MLB regular season now are 17-9. The former member of the Oakland A's, Cole Irvin, he was the Orioles starting pitcher for the 7-0 win on Saturday, and he was great. Irvin tossed 7 scoreless innings. He gave up just 4 hits, all of which were singles. He had 5 strikeouts versus no walks. He did issue a hit by pitch, but he threw a lot of strikes, 89 pitches, 63 strikes versus a mere 26 balls. Second consecutive good start for Irvin off him having not truly been good in any of his first 3 starts in this regular season. The O's got Irvin via trade with the A's in January 2023. The O's got their ace, Corbin Burnes, via trade with the Milwaukee Brewers this past February 1st. He was the Orioles starting pitcher for the 3-2, 10-inning loss to the A's on Friday night, but he was good. He allowed 1 run in 6 innings with 6 strikeouts. Burnes gave up just 3 hits, which were a solo homer and 2 singles. He did issue 3 walks. He threw 97 pitches, 61 strikes versus 36 balls. But the O's lost that game, and thanks in large part to their closer, Craig Kimbrell. Now, Kimbrell had been really good, so I don't want to destroy him for this outing on Friday night, but this outing was quite bad. Kimbrell fell to 7-for-9 on save chances in this regular season. As he and the top of the 9 struggled, he came into the game with the O's nursing a 2-1 lead. He faced 5 batters, but he got just 1 out. Kimbrell gave up a leadoff double by Brent Rooker to the left center field gap, issued a 5-pitch walk of J.J. Bladé, gave up a game-tying RBI double by Abraham Toro to deep right field beyond the leaping glove of right fielder Ryan McKenna, who was put into the game as a defensive replacement, and that double tied the game at 2. And Kimbrell then issued back-to-back one-out walks of Darrell Hernandez and Lawrence Butler to load the bases. Kimbrell in this appearance, 24 pitches, just 8 strikes versus 16 balls. Now, props to reliever Keegan Aiken for what he did on Friday night. He came into the game in the top of the 9th with the bases loaded, 1 out and the game tied at 2. He retired each of the 2 batters he faced to get out of the jam without allowing an inherited runner to score. Ultimately, 5 Orioles relievers in the game combined to allow 2 runs, 1 earned in 4 innings. The 7-0 win over the A's on Saturday, 2 Orioles relievers combined for 2 scoreless innings. Mike Bauman tossed a scoreless top of the 8th, and Dylan Tate tossed a scoreless and hitless top of the ninth. A mixed series for the Orioles offense so far. The 7-0 win over the A's on Saturday. The O's were good offensively. The O's scored 7 runs. The O's totaled 9 hits, which were made up of 3 home runs, a double, and 5 singles. The O's did work just 1 walk, but the O's went 4-for-8 with runners in scoring position. The top 3 batters in the Orioles lineup: shortstop Gunnar Henderson, designated hitter Adley Rutschman, and first baseman Ryan Mountcastle. Each guy homered. They went a combined 4-for-12 with 3 homers and a single. But the 3-2 10-inning loss to the A's on Friday night, the O's were not good offensively. I mean, we could talk about Craig Kimbrell in that game, but the O's over 10 innings scored just 2 runs, totaled just 6 hits, and worked just 1 walk. The 6 hits were a solo homer, a double, and 4 singles. The O's went 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position. Something else with the O's in recent days: the team has demoted Jackson Holliday. The O's on Friday afternoon announced having optioned second baseman slash shortstop Jackson Holliday to AAA Norfolk. So his first regular season stint at the major league level lasted for less than a month. It was on April 10th that the O's selected the contract of Jackson Holliday from AAA Norfolk. Holliday, during this stint at the major league level, 36 plate appearances, 2-for-34 with 2 singles, 2 walks, and 18 strikeouts. The man who is the consensus number one prospect in baseball got humbled in this initial regular season stint at the major league level. Now, obviously, you don't want to be toggling a top prospect between the minors and the majors. The idea when you promote a top prospect to the majors is for him to stay in the majors. But the O's are a contending team, and so developing a young player at the major league level is not much of an option. My inclination was for Holliday to stay at the major league level and play through his struggles, but the struggles were lingering. And again, the O's are a contending team. They are a win-now team. It just really stands out how well Holliday was doing at Norfolk and then how poorly he did in the majors. But this season is just his age 20 season. He is so young. I believe that he'll be just fine. But this was O's executive vice president and general manager, Mike Elias, in a session with reporters on Friday afternoon.
I want to emphasize that this is a kid that is doing extremely well and is at the very infancy of his major league career. And, you know, I don't know if anyone else from his age group or draft class, high school hitters are even out of the A ball levels yet. And so I want to stress that he's doing very, very well and way ahead of the curve. And, this was a decision out of camp that was very borderline for me at the time. Got a lot of opinions. We had different opinions inside the organization. We ended up sending him down, and he hit really, really well in AAA for a couple of series, about 2 weeks. And so we decided to call him up and see how the translation to the major leagues would go on a short-term basis. And what we have seen here and had seen led me to the evaluation and the opinion that he would benefit from going back and adjusting there rather than doing it here in real time. We got a looks like another slate of left-handed starters coming up too, pretty heavy. So it probably meant a lot of time sitting out of the starting lineup for him during those games, and he needs repetitions. And so I think the bright side of this is he got very intense, very specific feedback from Major League Pitching. He's a brilliant talent and a very sharp kid. And I expect he's going to go implement those adjustments really quickly, but we felt the AAA and steady playing time in AAA was the place for that for a number of different reasons, including, like I said, his projected playing time for the next couple of weeks, but also, you know, the fact that we've got a team in a tight race in the American League East, and, you know, it's just not an optimal place to be doing player development for a kid like him. So it's nothing that anything that Jackson did. We were the ones that have been moving him along this quickly, and it was a little hiccup, and I think it's probably the first one that he's ever had, and he's ultimately going to be better off for it. This is something that we did, and I think once became clear to me that he would benefit better from going back to AAA, resetting his head first and foremost, but also making some adjustments at the plate. Wanted to do it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, you know, there is no textbook for developing a top prospect. There is no exact right time to promote a top prospect from the minors to the majors. You do the best that you can, and you hope for the best. What has happened with Jackson Holliday is a reminder that there is a big difference between AAA and the majors. Holliday was killing it for AAA. He, at the time of being promoted to the majors, had an OPS of 1,077 for Norfolk this season. But the results at the major league level, a bit different. More from Mike Elias on Friday afternoon.
I've come to not get surprised at all with how different players respond to the translation from AAA to the majors, because it's huge, and it seems to be getting bigger in today's game, and we've seen it all. And all you got to do is look around this locker room in here to see examples, both pitchers and hitters, of guys were kind of similar, like what happened with Grayson. We were sort of borderline on adding him opening day. We went with somebody else. We called him up really quickly because we had an injury. He went through some struggles, went back down, reset, came up, and he's been the Grayson Rodriguez that this organization drafted and developed since then. So this jump is big. It's unpredictable. It's different for every guy. The bottom line is, to me, is Jackson is way ahead of the curve. He's doing everything we asked him to do. And, you know, we're the ones that have put him in different spots this year. And you know, we try to make the best decisions that we possibly can on that front. But it's not always easy. And this was a very unique case.
Yes, it was and is. And you heard some humility from Mike Elias right there. Game 3 for the O's against the A's at Oriole Park at Camden Yards is on Sunday afternoon at 1:35. Albert Suarez will be the Oriole starting pitcher. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Monday show, episode 816. We'll have a lot for you on the Commanders, as we will have a special guest to discuss what the Commanders did in the 2024 NFL Draft. Also on Monday's show, I'll talk Capitals, Nationals, and Orioles. The Caps are home to the New York Rangers on Sunday night at 8 for Game 4 of the team's best-of-seven first-round series in the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Caps are down 3-0. The Nats are at the Miami Marlins Sunday afternoon at 1:40 for Game 3 of a 4-game series. The O's are home to the Oakland A's Sunday afternoon at 1:35 for Game 3 of a 3-game series. Have a great rest of your Sunday, and I'll talk to you on Monday.
Some quarterbacks start right away, some kind of sit and wait. How prepared do you think you are to be a pro quarterback right away?
Man, I don't know the playbook, so I'm not prepared right now.